Hello.
Yes, Stephen, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Are we back? So sorry about that, man. And sorry to our listeners. Maybe it's because so many people have tuned in. But I got completely disconnected there. I was actually explaining that it was possibly your bad connection there, Stephen, but I take it all back. I got kicked off completely. I don't understand that. So sorry to everybody. And we basically got dropped off. You were talking about when Janice Alsted, not Janice Alsted, what am I saying? Jill Marcus was imposing different policy to get rid of you. Sorry about that, man.
Yes. And they wanted to get rid of anyone whom that don't like. So of the 15 directors on the board of the Reserve Bank, there are three are deputy governors, one is a governor, and then the 11 remaining are non-executive directors, four nominated by government, and then the other seven are elected by shareholders.
Okay, Faiz, are you still with me now? Hello? Guys.
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, sorry, I don't know. Now I've seemed to have lost Stephen now again.
So no, I'm here.
Are you there? Sorry, we just lost you there for a second. Sorry, man.
Oh, okay.
There seem to be gremlins in the system, you know. I don't know. It's basically on our Skype call. It's not holding up so lekker. But do continue. Let's persist.
Right, so that is the situation today. It's very difficult to become a director, and they screen you, and obviously they only want people who are, what I should say, are not mamparas, but people who will toe the line and not question anything.
Or not cause a stir. No. Okay, Veronica says, can Stephen close all his other programs running? Example, email, it might help. That is very true. But there, I seem to have lost both of them. The whole call just died on me. Sorry about this, guys. And, you know, we try to bring you good talk radio, but it's not always as straightforward as that. We sometimes have some issues. So, yeah, as he was basically saying there, it's not as straightforward as it used to be when getting involved with something like the Reserve Bank. I mean, I'll say that just this week, I actually had a client ask me to go and do some shots of the Reserve Bank. And the guys outside obviously came to me, as they do in most public spaces, because this is what I do. I take pictures. I make pictures and they move. I am trying to get these guys back in the background. My connection seems to have dropped off again. So sorry, I don't understand this. Sorry about this, guys. What can I say? I've got some things to sort out here. But like I was saying, I was trying to take some shots of the Reserve Bank, and I got shooed away, and I told the guy, is this not... does this place not belong to us? Am I not allowed to take a shot of it? And he was like, yeah, it's belongs to us, but it's a national key point. That's why you can't take a shot of it. So when dealing with all things around places like the Reserve Bank. Okay. Are you gentlemen back with me?
Julia.
Logistics are crazy. Yeah. Lovely, man. Sorry about this, guys. I've been apologizing to the guys. But somehow we're not, our connection's not lasting this evening. But do remember, if you're having trouble connecting, this is also available as a podcast. We'll podcast this, but the idea of being live is so that we can have live interaction with our guests, like Veronica. She made some suggestion there, Stephen. She says, if you try and turn off some of your programs running on your computer, like email and stuff, and maybe this line will hold up. So, yeah, let's get back into it. We're going to persist as long as we can. If we continue to have these issues, then maybe you just have to tune in for the podcast. So, apologies once again, gentlemen.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead, Stephen.
Yes. No, I think that sort of wraps up that question. No, what's the next one?
Oh yeah, so you said, Stephen, that they choose people who are basically yes men. They basically agree to everything. They don't question, you know, practices that's going on at the Reserve Bank. And if you start to do that, then you are not one of the team, and they kick you out. Is that correct? Is that the kind of culture that exists at the Reserve Bank?
They do. When they do select people, you have to have certain qualifications. Like there's one director who has to have a knowledge of agriculture, and then they have several have to have for the auditing committee. They obviously have to have an accounting experience. So they do draw people for their specialist skills. But when it comes to the actual running of the bank, that's where everything falls down because while I was there, all the non-executive directors had very little knowledge of how the banking system actually works.
Well, that's a shocking revelation there. I mean, if you're part of the banking system, you should really, or if you're a non-executive director, even a director, you should know how banks work. But I must be quite honest with you, I came across a professor who also didn't actually know how the money creation system works, actually. He had a completely different idea of how it works in reality. But I want to come back to what we said at the beginning, Stephen. We said, you know, that the Reserve Bank, the central banking system, in fact, the financial system is a scam.
Yes.
Now, would you agree with that, Stephen? Would that be a fair thing to say?
Yes. The thing is, let's just go a little back in history just to say, to explain to the listeners how it all started. The first major central bank was the Bank of England in 1694. And by the turn of the 20th century, we had 18 central banks, mainly located in Europe, and there were one or two others in Japan and Indonesia. And then after the First World War, there was a huge increase in the number of central banks. And there was a meeting held in Italy in 1922 where they stipulated that all these new central banks must be independent of government. In other words, they would be working for and on behalf of the private banks, and government must not interfere. And they, in fact, are almost an independent power. Mm-hmm. And so the South African Reserve Bank was started 1 year before 1921. And it was modeled on the U.S. Federal Reserve Bank, but with the difference that it delegates the creation of money to the private banks. And it hands out licenses to the commercial banks, and they create the money supply when someone borrows money from them. So, for example,
they are the credit facility that everybody talks about.
Yes, well, the Reserve Bank can create money itself, but they don't. They do it on a very limited scale. What they do, of course, create is the notes and coins. They print and mint them, but they are form only a very small percentage of the money supply, roughly about 6%. So the other 94% is created by the banks, and they have to lodge reserves, which at the Reserve Bank. You know, cash reserves or treasury bonds or whatever. And then they can lend 10 times the amount of reserves that they've left at the bank, the Reserve Bank.
So fractional reserve lending, as we learn in modern money mechanics.
Yes, but they don't teach you that at university. That's why that professor doesn't know how the money supply originates.
But you know what? Right. There's a lot of guys that even work in a bank today, okay? And I was actually chatting to one of them on the weekend. And I mean, I obviously won't divulge names or whatever. They're not allowed to speak on behalf of the bank. But as far as this guy knows, he says the bank doesn't bring any money. It can't bring any money into circulation that's not there. So he's basically saying that they are not. And like from my experience with banks and lending, they always refer to this credit facility, which is not them. And as far as we understand, when we trace it with like securitization and stuff, the bank is not actually the lender of the money. So we naturally assume then that the Reserve Bank is the person that's allowed to conjure the money. And I mean, going back to like one of our listeners asked on Facebook, even she says we should ask about the birth certificates and if you have any knowledge about that. And as far as a lot of people are concerned, or a lot of people's understanding goes, that the Reserve Bank kind of gives us a money supply based on the chattel, the its, you know, its assets being us, the citizens. So they, I've got this understanding that the Reserve Bank is the one that's bringing all the money into existence. And the banks actually also have that kind of extended license to also bring more money into existence through the Reserve Bank. Because, I mean, someone like Nedbank gives reference to a credit facility, you know. And I asked them and I said, is this the Reserve Bank? And the guy said, yes, it's the Reserve Bank. Not that anybody actually knows what's going on with banking. And this is why we have to discuss it, because we need to get to the core. We need to get to a good understanding of how this all works.
Yes, no, it's not correct to say that the Reserve Bank creates the money. It does in the United States. There, the U.S. Federal Reserve Bank plays a large role in creating money, which it lends back to government. But in South Africa's case, the money is all, the 94% of the money in circulation has been created by commercial banks. And a common example is when you apply for a home loan. The assumption which you will read in your school or your university textbook is that the bank takes, let's say, half a million rand from someone's savings account, and then they transfer that money into your loan account, your bond account. And of course, that's not true. All they do is they give you the right to draw that amount of money. And that money, that becomes a loan. You now have 500,000 rand, and that reflects as an asset in their books. And then obviously they have to create the liability. So they just create that in their books. And now this freshly created money is in your account, and you can go and spend it, buy your house or make repairs or whatever. But this this is fresh money, and the big liability, the big drawback, is that you're now going to have to pay interest and interest on interest. And that is why we have inflation, because when they created that loan for your house, they didn't allow for the interest that has to be paid. So additional loans eventually have to come into circulation, and it's not matched by any productivity or any labor, and that's why we have inflation.
Yeah, well, that money creation process at the commercial bank level, I mean, I think a lot of people are now starting to get familiar with that. The fact that, in fact, banks don't have money. They're not intermediaries. They don't lend out savers' money. Borrowers are not given the money that savers deposit at the banks. In fact, the borrowers themselves really create the money. It's not really even the banks that are doing that. Because without the signature of the borrower, then the banks can't create those deposits. So that's quite, I think more and more people are starting to understand that banks don't actually lend money, because a loan is something completely different to what they understand it to be in terms of banking. But coming back to the central banks, now you said they only create about 6% of the money in circulation. So if government wants to borrow money, my understanding was that government goes to the central bank, borrows how many billions it needs, and then has to pay back that loan with interest over time. So where does government get its money from if the central bank doesn't print money to lend to government, Stephen?
It goes into the capital markets, and it issues a prospectus. They want 1 billion at 7.5%. And that is institutions like life insurance companies, short-term insurers, they then subscribe to those loans. And it's all existing money. Money that's been already created is used in order to finance government's borrowings. And then they pay interest to the bondholders. It could be private individuals, institutions, pension funds, and that type of thing. So it's all existing money. But now, excuse me, if we had a state banking system, the Reserve Bank would supply government with all its needs for infrastructure, for building roads and bridges and dams, and like for Eskom. And it would just charge a small handling fee. Maybe it would be interest, but maybe 0.25% or 0.5%, just to cover the cost of the transactions. And that money would be interest free, and it also mean it would be inflation free. But it has been done in the past. And those countries which have introduced that system, they've then been taken down. They declare a war, like in World War II. There were three countries who were using that system: Germany, Italy, and Japan. And that's why we had World War II. World War I, Russia had a state bank, and that's why we had to have a war in order to take Russia down. It's happened throughout history. Like Napoleon, he set up a state bank, and that's why we had all the Napoleonic Wars. They did entirely different reasons in the history books, but that is the sort of dynamic force throughout the last 300 years. It's all the bankers are continually protecting their system, and they don't mind killing hundreds of millions of people. It doesn't matter. They want their system to remain in perpetuity.
I see. Okay. So government debt is then basically owned by, not mainly the Reserve Bank, but by private entities, as you said.
That's
insurance
right.
companies, etc.
Yes. But as I said, this is money which has been created by the banks themselves. It's circulating.
The commercial banks, obviously, yes.
But you also got to remember that whenever money gets paid back, it gets destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to, the banks are continually encouraging people to borrow. Because if you don't borrow, the money supply is going to shrink and you're going to have a slump. And that's why we have a lot of unnecessary growth in order to keep the loans repeating themselves. And that's one of the reasons why they have that boosted China as a producer of goods which are generally not of the same quality or in other countries. So that this is a continual consumption and a continual borrowing, because that's the only way the system can survive.
Well, the system is designed then because it's keeping you in servitude, it's keeping you in slavery. You've got to keep working to pay off money, interest on your loans, basically. And they have to keep on lending out money, but they have to keep on creating money to keep the system going. And people have to keep on working to pay off money that they don't really owe the banks. So it's a scam, basically. It's a slavery system.
Yes.
But
I wanted to ask you a question. Sorry, Julian. Government raises money through taxation, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously the deficit they raise through the means that you said they do. So the purpose then of the central bank, the Reserve Bank, then, besides what you mentioned earlier on, is there any other purpose besides that?
Well, as I mentioned, the Reserve Bank prints the banknotes, mints the coins. It also provides financial stability. It's a lender of last resort. When something like a bank like African Bank goes bankrupt, they have to sort it out and bail out the depositors. It also issues statistics and financial bulletins, and we still have what we call exchange control. And you also have what they call the registrar of banks, who has to monitor what the banks are doing all the time, that they are abiding by their regulations. So there are quite a number of other functions, but which are not actually connected with money creation.
I think one of them is to protect the value of the currency. Would that be correct, Stephen?
Yes, that's in the three sections in the Constitution, section 223 to 225, and one of them is to protect the value of the currency in the interest of sustainable growth. Now, of course, that is a real scam, because since 1921, the rand has lost 99.5% of its value.
Exactly.
So
yes.
They don't keep. They're not there to protect it. That's just for public consumption. In fact, they're because of the system, they are destroying the rand on a daily basis, the value of the rand, and
So they basically failed the test. I mean, if they said that's what we have to do is to protect the value of the rand, and a few decades later the rand is really worth way less than what it was when they first started out. Why are they still around, these guys? I mean, they're not doing their job.
Well, I mean, that's perfectly obvious. But you must remember you can criticize the Reserve Bank, say, for example, over inflation targeting, but you will never be able to question their existence, because my understanding is that the press and the media in this country, they are advised by a couple of big legal firms, and they tell them you may not question the existence or the integrity of the Reserve Bank. It's off limits, so it never gets debated. I mean, you'll never see it on a TV program. You won't see it in a radio show.
So you were actually like they wanted to arrest you for the book that you published. Am I correct?
Well, they say that I contravened a section in the which is that you may not reveal
the secrets.
Well, not only the secrets, but the inner workings. But that section was only introduced in 1989. The bank's been legislation started in 1920, and that clause did not appear. And the reason why it came in 1989, well, that was to cover up the gold that was being stolen at that time, and so that was to intimidate the employees not to, to leak anything out. But I mean, the point is, if you are disclosing things that are criminal, that clause will not cover criminal activity. So I don't believe that I'm subject to it.
Okay. So, I mean, just to remind everybody once again, we have got some people on our chat room, and just to remind everybody that you can actually field your questions in the chat room. Or have something to say, and we'll happily ask Mr. Goodson about those questions and get a response. And we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter. You can even add us on Google Chat. We are ZATalkRadio@gmail.com, so you can get hold of us there as well. Send us emails and give us your input on this discussion. Something I wanted to know, Stephen, was how long after being in the system, what was your journey like in terms of discovering all this? Is this something you discovered late into your career there? I mean, slowly discovered, or you've been looking into and tried to possibly change from the inside, or how did it go?
Well, I've been aware that the banking system has been corrupt now for over 30 years, and
so even during your participation with the Reserve Bank, was it in efforts to...
Yes. Before I joined the bank, I knew that the system was a scam. But obviously, when you join a new organization, you have to, take a back seat and see how the system works. And that's exactly what I did. I was just an observer more than anything else. And I did, became better known, I did try to introduce various changes, including converting the Reserve Bank into a state bank. And I handed in a 70-page memorandum. And unfortunately, Jill Marcus didn't know what it was all about, so she gave it to one of the economists, and he said, no, it won't work. So that was the end of it. We couldn't even discuss. I couldn't have it discussed at a board meeting. So a lot of the people have high qualifications. There are a lot of ignorant people there who really don't know what's going on. They don't understand the damage that the system does. And of course, they are generally very well paid. They've got secure employment, and It's unlikely that anyone's going to rock the boat there, because if you do, you will obviously be dismissed.
Yeah. Yeah, crazy situation we found ourselves in. Go for it,
Faisal. It's crazy, yeah. Yeah, no, it's crazy. I've heard it said that, it's difficult to get a man to understand something if his salary depends on him not understanding it.
Yeah.
So you just can't convince people that, this whole system is really dysfunctional, it's criminal, if, they're earning their living in the system. And I think that's the big problem we face. I mean, how do you actually deal with a problem like that? I mean, I don't think I don't think one can even deal with it. It's just not possible. People just don't want to hear, the truth, because doesn't really interest them because they earn their living by living in a system which is untruthful and dishonest.
Yes, well, eventually, of course, this system cannot continue forever. There's been such a huge amassing of wealth by a very small percentage of people, and the bulk of the population have been so impoverished. Eventually, the system will break. And, you know, we see it now, especially over the last 20 years, there's been a huge concentration of wealth in very few hands, to the extent that today, according to a calculation called the Gini coefficient,
yes,
which has been in existence since 1912, we have the worst distribution of wealth in the world, of income in the world.
That's correct.
That is a shocking indictment.
When you say we, are you talking about South Africa?
Yes. You know, whereas in the 70s or 60s, we actually had a much fairer society in terms of the distribution of income. And this system now has actually been almost reinforced. It's been made worse.
Yeah.
And we see the evidence of it everywhere. I mean, you know, the 6 million people living in squatter camps and the...
The squatter camps are growing, actually. They're not getting any smaller.
No, they're not. And it's affecting everyone. I mean, someone was telling me that it's not only black people. There are about 1 million white people living in camps now. So the whole population has been affected by it. And it's just getting worse. And, of course, government just are clueless as how to tackle it.
Well, the diabolical thing is that this is not something by accident. It's actually by design. It's designed to create exactly the outcomes that we're seeing. I mean, there's no other outcome that can occur in a system that's designed the way it's designed. And so that is the big challenge for everybody who can see what, you know, what the system is all about. But because people's minds are so closed, it's very difficult to even convince the very people that are suffering in the system that the system itself is causing them to be where they are. So that, for me, is the big challenge. How do you actually convince people and let them see that, in fact, the system is designed to create exactly what it's doing? Now, you're quite right. You say the system will break. It has to break. It's not sustainable. But when it's going to break, I don't think anybody knows that.
Yeah.
But the whole point is that it's designed to do exactly what it's doing right now.
A lot of people, I personally believe that when you say when it's going to break, it's like a play that they're timing, you know. They're kind of holding all the cards at the moment, these banking cartels. But to come back to our chat room, Veronica there says, hi, Stephen. We love both your books. You are very brave and true champion of our country. My question, so many South Africans, sorry guys, so many South Africans are desperate because of unemployment and inflation. What's your advice to the average person on the street? How do we fight or survive this? Are there solutions? You know, it's coming from one of our listeners, Stephen.
Yes. Look, there's no easy answer to that because we're living in a totally corrupt system where the bankers have complete control of the media. They have complete control of the education system. So we are being brainwashed into believing that this is actually a normal way of living now.
Yeah.
And we've also been conned into believing that we have a democracy which distributes all the fruits of our labor and so forth. I mean, that is also another scam. But to get back to the point of how to survive, look, the best advice I can give you is don't get into debt. Because that is the surest way to worsen your situation. If you've got a property, your first priority is just to pay it off and not be constantly making all these payments.
Yeah.
But Stephen, the system is designed to keep you indebted to the system. I mean, it's very difficult to get out of debt. I mean, with the taxes, you're taxed basically in every aspect of your life. You know, you fill up petrol and you're taxed. You know, you work and you're taxed. Every part of your life, you're taxed. So they're taking away from you and you're earning less. Inflation is making your money worth less. Mm. And so the whole system is designed to keep you indebted. I mean, it's a big, I can understand what you're saying. Mm. You know, minimize your debt, or eliminate your debt. But, I mean, that's a big challenge, actually.
Yes. Well,
wouldn't alternative systems be maybe the solution? You know, don't use the current financial system.
use Bitcoin.
Community currencies.
Yes, you can yeah. do that. I mean, there are alternatives like LETS in the local exchange trading systems, but these are very dependent on having a community spirit, because yes. they're all based on trust. And yes. if you get one or two people who abuse the system, then the whole thing's going to collapse. So it's very important that you have a spirit of togetherness, and it can work at a sort of very localized level, where you exchange your services and you don't pay interest, you don't pay tax, you don't even transfer money, you just transfer units. So that can work on a local level, but when it comes to the overall situation. We are very constrained, and the one weapon we can use, and that is to inform people, to spread the word that the system is rotten.
That's what we're trying to do.
Absolutely.
That's exactly what we're trying to do with like platforms like this. And it's just trying to raise awareness and make people aware of what's going on. Yeah, sorry. Go for it, Steve. Yeah.
As I say, the education system has been totally corrupted. I mean, you've got all these university professors who don't even know how the money system works. So what
happened? I have to agree with you there. Yeah, and go ahead.
If these professors or these lecturers start telling a different story, they're not going to last there long.
No.
So it's a vicious circle which it's very hard to break. But to get the word out. I mean, that has got to be one of the major planks of trying to change the system.
Education.
Once you've got a critical mass, then you can really start moving. But until you've got that critical mass, when we're just isolated in small groups, then not much is going to happen. Of course, we can still try. Well, I don't think it'll be all that effective is to approach your political leaders and inform them. As far as I know, there's only one party that actually advocates a state bank, and that's the EFF.
Yeah.
And so if you've got contacts with the DA or any of the other parties, you should then put pressure on them to change the system. And you've got to be active. You can't be just wait for someone else to do it. If you don't do it, it's not going to happen.
Exactly. We can't be passive. We need to take responsibility for ourselves and move forward, you know.
But then the people themselves are responsible for their own situation they find themselves in, because they keep voting, parties into power that are keeping them, in servitude by maintaining the policies that keep the banks in power. Because it's really the banks that own countries and run countries, and not governments, the way I see it. And so this mind control, this brainwashing, like you mentioned, I think that's where we have to start, is to actually, there are ways to help people reprogram themselves. But, it pains me every 4 or 5 years when the general elections come around that, the very people that are suffering are going to vote, people into power that are keeping them in this state of suffering. It's like insanity.
Well, actually, Faiz, I agree with you, but I don't think all of them are voting, because you have to understand that the IEC is probably one of the most corrupt institutions in this country. There's no such thing as a free and fair election in South Africa.
Yeah.
And I mentioned in the book, when I stood for the Ubuntu Party last year, we had tremendous support, where we had over 1,000 field workers. We were really making inroads. And we were banking on at least 2 MPs, about 100,000 votes. And we knew from the, for example, the overseas votes, people who live in overseas can vote at the embassies. And there were 18,000 people who voted overseas. And one of our people attended the count, and we got 4,500 of those votes.
Okay.
And when we looked at this receipt, you get a scan receipt after all the counting, we found we only had 16 votes.
What?
Yes, they. I mean, the whole thing was rigged, and we knew part of the problem was we'd put up a huge trailer outside Soweto in different parts of Johannesburg saying that the Bank for International Settlements controls the Reserve Bank.
It does, yes.
And they obviously, they. I mean, it's very easy. You just make a phone call or whatever, or a meeting, and we lost all our votes. In the end, we got 8,000 votes. So you have to understand that they've been manipulating the voting since 1994. And they're using that, the ANC is their sort of means for retaining control. I would imagine if you had a real proper count, and if you think of what's happened, how things have broken down, how the, you know, the municipalities are not functioning, how the there's no more power and that kind of thing, you'd think that the ANC would probably only get about maybe 30 or 40% of the vote. But they get 26 every election. And that can only indicate that the vote's been manipulated. So it really, it's very discouraging. You know, if you think you're going to change it through the ballot box, I don't see it happening that way.
Yeah,
but also they got the percentage they got of the people who voted, but there's a large percentage of people who don't vote. So it's not a percentage of the entire voting population.
No, it's even smaller because you've got to remember only 85% of the population have registered, never mind voted. And then only another about 70% have voted. So, in fact, the ANC probably only has about 20% of the people supporting them.
Yeah. But, I mean, it doesn't matter who's in power if they all sort of sing the same tune and continue the same policies, you know. Where does that leave everybody? Doesn't the system have to change? Because people think we have a capitalist system, a laissez-faire, free market capitalist system. And we have a democracy, but that's not really true, actually. We actually have a corporate capitalist, a corporate fascist system, if you really think about it. It's a corporate system.
Yes.
Or corporate bankism. It's corporate bankism. Let's call it that.
That's
corporate
right.
Bankism or fascist bankism.
The country is run by the bankers, and the ANC is the party of big business. They support big business. They've been doing that, you know. I mean, if you go right back in history, you know, who financed the Communist Party in 1917? Mm-hmm. Who paid for all the revolutionaries? It was the bankers in New York, and it was the Bank of England.
Yeah.
They were channeling all the funds. Now, do you think that they're spending all that money just for because they have a social goodwill? No, that's an investment, and communism was an investment. So to think, and it's there to deceive people to think that there are, that we have a choice, but there is no choice.
The goal of the New World Order is one world government. So they're obviously rallying all the governments together so that we can all come under one banner, one world government. So it's quite understandable, you know, seeing what we're seeing today. It's just the fact that governments are really not independent entities for a country. They have to answer to higher powers, let's put it that way. We're all heading towards a one world government.
Yes, well, we do have it already in effect. I mean, it hasn't been formalized. We see how the blocks are coming together, the North America, NAFTA, and then you have it in the European Union, and you have, they want to start an African Union. And then once all these blocks have been formalized, cemented, then they'll all come together. But we have it already. It's not just completely apparent.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's moving very fast in that direction. But we do have it to a large degree. You're quite right there, Stephen. But now, what do we do? I mean, we had Dr. Omar Zaid on last week, and he said, you know, there's nothing. Well, he didn't say there's nothing we can do, but he says these people are very powerful. They own everything, really, and really and truly they do. They own the education system. They own everything. What does the common man in the street do? What would be your response be to that, Stephen?
Well, in terms of number, they're actually very small. They're a tiny group, maybe a few hundred. Mm-hmm. And then around that tiny little group, they are surrounded by all the various police forces and armies and NATO and that protect them. And then you've got the vast mass of humanity. So we've got the numbers. They haven't got the numbers.
But they've got the expertise and we don't.
Well, yes,
They've got the technology. They probably have stuff that we don't even know about. I would imagine.
Yes.
That's keeping them, you know, in power. I think for me on the ground, we have to educate people, you know, make them aware, help them deprogram and then reprogram themselves. I mean, I did that to my own self, quite honestly. I deprogrammed myself and reprogrammed myself. I honestly did that because I realized what I was taught, you know, at university, business school wasn't in many ways completely wrong. It's deception.
Yes.
And so if you look, talking about people, millions upon millions of people walking around with delusions, they deluded. They had their whole false beliefs about how the world really works. And that is the big problem that we faced with, actually.
Yes. So they, you know, I mean, we did have one example, which is Libya, where Colonel Gaddafi set up a wonderful socialist system there, which worked. And he was taken down.
They go against anybody that tries to do anything for the people. That's like that's evident in like books like with the Economic Hitman and stuff like that as well. But can I cut in here for a second? I wanted to ask a question from one of our one of our listeners. And something that I'm also curious about from time to time. If we were to revert back to the gold standard instead of fiat money, would we like alleviate the problem? Would it all go away if money was something once again like gold that's tangible? I don't know. I wonder about it, but I don't think so because of...
No, the gold standard is another scam. And it worked really well for the people who controlled most of the gold.
Exactly, exactly. That's what my argument is all the time. Like, only a handful of people pull this stuff out of the ground.
Yes. Well, it's a bit ridiculous, you know. They pull the stuff out of the ground in one place, and then put it into another vault.
I mean, exactly.
I remember once reading some about the German central bank. It was the governor in 1940. He said that if America dropped all its gold into the Pacific Ocean, well, what would happen? The factories would open up the next day. You know, nothing would change. So gold is just a deception.
Gold is another fiat currency, basically, that certain people pull out of the ground and the rest of us don't have access to it.
No, and it all depends how they set the value and they can manipulate. And that's what they were doing throughout the 19th century and until it was abandoned. Eventually it was abandoned in 1971 when Nixon... stopped exchanging American dollars for gold.
Yeah.
So I don't see that as a solution at all.
Okay. And then, he gives reference to the fact that Russia and Asia are all trying to basically get hold of their gold again. So, yeah, I also don't... I don't agree with that gold.
It might be just a tactical move, maybe to get rid of dollars. But... I don't see that as a sort of forerunner of an introduction to return to the gold standard.
And what are your thoughts on something a little bit? I mean, I've got a lot more questions in our chat room. Maybe if I ease you can get to reading some of those.
Yes, I'm actually seeing that. I see Don's quite a moment, few comments there. I actually just asked Don, what is PFMPE?
Yeah.
But I want to just come back to the gold standard. So you think the gold standard doesn't really work? It's another scam, Stephen. Don't you think that the gold standard sort of prevents inflation if you link your currency to gold, and you say, for example, your currency is valued, or the gold is valued at $35 an ounce or whatever, and then you just can't print, you know, money willy-nilly like happened when the gold standard was removed. So the gold standard is a type of restraint on money printing and inflation. Would that not be right, Stephen?
Well, the problem is that the population of the world, 100 years ago, what was it, 3 billion or even less.
Yeah.
We just don't have the amount of gold to satisfy the amount of money we need to keep the world economy going.
Okay.
So you'd have to be continually increasing the price, and it would benefit some, and it would also be a huge disadvantage to others, because what determines the value of a currency is your labor productivity, not how much gold you can collect.
Yes.
Yeah, so something. So would you advocate then something a little bit like something for instance like Bitcoin as a.
Well, yeah. Well, that yeah. I mean, Bitcoin's a private venture, and it is open to abuse. So I don't, you know,
It's not actually. It's an algorithm, and it's an open ledger, and I mean, it makes everybody that's on the system accountable for the system. So I don't know how it's really open for abuse. I mean. The guys have definitely used it to do illegal things because there's anonymity. Anonymity that comes along with it. But I don't see what you mean when you say it can be tampered with, because other parties have been robbed of Bitcoin because they're storing Bitcoin for people. But I mean. A concept we like to come back to often here is sovereignty, and like we always say, with sovereignty comes responsibility. So we need to be responsible for our own finances, and something like Bitcoin does that. It puts the responsibility back on everybody.
Yes, but at the end of the day, you know, you probably need a national body controlling it. Otherwise, then you get rival Bitcoins coming into circulation, and. You don't have any kind of uniformity, so it does seem to work on a limited scale. But you know whether it can be, we can actually use it for trading or international trading. I somewhat doubt it at this stage.
I'm a big believer in Bitcoin myself, actually. But I mean that's another discussion for another day. Coming back to just something that I was actually chatting to you about off air there, Stephen, was I think it's a recording of you and a police officer when he was trying to I think he was trying to arrest you for releasing your book.
Yes.
Was that what was going on?
No, it was just a preliminary meeting. He said he had received this complaint, and it will have to be investigated by the Department of Special Crimes. But what happened was that he hadn't read the book, so that's why the meeting sort of
fizzled out.
Well, he wasn't able to provide any counter arguments. We were just informing him that his complaints didn't have any foundation. But the fact that he didn't know what it was all about, it was all, you know, poorly prepared on his behalf.
Okay. And then, I mean, do you believe that something like the fact that the banks and the Reserve Bank has been foreclosed on under UCC is actually a legitimate argument for people, you know?
Well, it hasn't actually happened yet, so I think until it has happened, we can't really, make it a major news item. But it may happen, put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, we've got a Don has posted a long statement here, and I quite honestly, I don't really understand most of it.
That's why I asked you to read it, because I was struggling to get my head around it there.
I don't actually. I read it twice now, but I'm not really sure what it's all about. So maybe Don can just maybe very briefly, you know, just restate what he's saying. Or if there's any question, you know, that he has, then we can pose that to Stephen.
I was planning on taking some calls from our listeners, but when we got dropped off, I changed my setup a little bit, and now I cannot take calls anymore because I just my bad. So unfortunately, we won't be having any live calls. So if you do have any questions, the chat room is the place, and let's try and keep it nice and short and concise. Sometimes it's a bit difficult to get our head around these paragraphs that people submit like this. But go ahead, please.
Yeah, so Stephen, obviously, you know, whenever you're dealing with anything in the world today, whether it's healthcare or the law or governments or whatever, you got to look at it within the context of the New World Order, because that's what it's all about. What is your solutions? I mean, I know we've spoken about solutions, but really fundamentally, what are your sort of take home advice for our listeners and everybody else, Stephen, in terms of the solutions for this country in the context of the New World Order? And I'm talking about economic financial solutions.
Yes, well, you don't have sovereignty unless, if you do not have control over the emission of your circulating medium, your money, then you're not a sovereign country.
Right.
You're bordering on a slave state, and that is the situation in South Africa. In fact, we've been like that since 1652.
Right.
Nothing has changed. I mean, we've had all these various liberation days and freedom days and what republic days, but actually they really don't mean too much. We've been conned into believing that we have freedom, and I think that was one of the objectives, was to lull the population into believing that now you've got the vote, shut up. Don't make any more noise. You know, you ask what you want it for, and I just get on with it. And yeah. I think that's the biggest mistake you make, that you think that we actually have freedom. Don't have freedom, and we've got quite a long way to go before we get it. But the cornerstone of freedom is having sovereignty over your internal affairs, over your economic affairs. And that can only be restored when you control the issue of the circulating medium money. And that would imply the need to have a state bank, which is run by the Treasury. It can be sort of outsourced to a type of reserve bank for doing certain functions, but the money that comes into circulation must have been created by the state as free of debt and free of interest. In that way, then we can drastically reduce taxation, because remember, a lot of the taxation goes to paying the interest on government loans, on paying the interest on Eskom loans, on municipal loans. All that money would come back to us. And it has a multiplier effect. Once we have control of our destiny, things start to happen, and they happen very rapidly. If you go back in the 1930s, when Germany took control of its money supply, it had, in 1933, there were 6 million unemployed. 6 years later, they were actually looking for workers. They had to bring in people, elderly, retired people. They had to bring in people from foreign countries. One thing I must stress, and this is a point of hope, you can turn this around very rapidly. It's not a long, drawn-out process.
Well, that's very hopeful there, Stephen. When I look at the EFF, sorry, Julian, what they're trying to do, they're actually part of the system, but they're obviously trying to achieve economic freedom. I think it's a big battle, but you're quite right. Sovereignty is what it's all about. Now, with the BRICS being on stage now and South Africa being part of BRICS, are you saying, your statement that it could happen very rapidly, are you saying that within the context of BRICS, or would BRICS be separate from the New World Order agenda, or are they just basically more of the same?
No, BRICS is part of the New World Order. A BRICS bank.
Yeah.
Was proposed by Goldman Sachs. So, and they will be charging interest on their loans. It's just a sort of a diversion to, because the IMF has become so unpopular, and the IMF, of course, is controlled by America because they have the controlling votes, 22%. They're just trying to deflect a bit of the sort of concern by the people in those countries, and they've set up this alternative bank. But it's not going to solve anything.
So if BRICS is part of the New World Order, that means Russia is part of the New World Order. So what's this NATO-Russia aggression, competition, yes, conflict, threatening of new World War III all about, Stephen?
Well, you see, when we had the Cold War, it was partly artificial, but the reason why we had a Cold War was that when they had the Bretton Woods conference in 1944, which set up the new monetary system, Russia didn't sign. Stalin refused to, because he realized that he would lose his sovereignty.
All right.
And he had started to go out on a completely different, independent, nationalistic line, and that's why they eventually assassinated him. He was poisoned in 1953. But Russia remained, it had its own state bank. But because it spent so much money on arms and non-essential items, the people never really benefited.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you had in 1990, when the changeover, everything. The Americans came in and they applied this shock treatment, and they literally cleaned out the country. All the oil companies and everything they bought up for pennies in the pound. And Russia now is back to square one. And Russia is also part of the problem because they don't have a state bank. They have a central bank. And the central bank controls the Russian economy.
That's right, exactly. That I found fascinating when I discovered that a while ago. I actually thought they had their own state bank.
It was the state bank of the Russian Empire from 1861 to 1917. And then it was the Kosbank, which was the state bank of the Soviet Union up till 1991. Thereafter, that will enable us to really produce an alternative, which they have to concede and they have to acknowledge.
Yes.
At the moment, they're still in their comfort zone where they think they can brush everyone aside because they control the media. But the media is changing rapidly. The print media is actually almost dead now. If it wasn't for subsidization, most of the newspapers, a lot of the magazines would have disappeared a long time ago. And they've always been anti-us, except for very few small exceptions.
Yes.
The whole way of communication has been almost a paradigm shift. And that will continue to grow, and that will continue to give us hope for change.
Okay, wow. Yeah.
Like we're doing now, trying to use the internet to get the word out there and connect with people and where they are able to connect with us, so that we don't all have to come to one place to have a little meeting. We can just share these chats,
Yeah. Well, it's great, man. I mean, we've learned a lot this evening, Stephen. Thanks for your time. Okay. Is there anything else you want to say, Julian?
I could go on for days asking questions in this regard, and hopefully Stephen can join us again sometime to to actually hopefully have a smoother broadcast than we had this evening. But once in a while we do have these gremlins that sneak up on us, and other times they're just unheard of. So, but obviously we're doing something good because somebody wants to put an end to it clearly. So,
yeah, I think maybe we must have a show just purely on solutions, we have spoken about this in the past, but it's something we need to focus on really in a big way. And maybe we must bring Stephen back on with one or two other guests also and just talk about, really implementation of solutions. I mean, the state bank, the People's Bank, is a major solution if it could be implemented.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
And that's what Ubuntu basically advocates. That's what Ubuntu was going for.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was our main plank, and we definitely got our message through. I mean, there was a terrific response. But, at the end of the day, we were cheated by the IEC.
And Ubuntu is not going to lose its momentum, or what is the status on that? I mean, because I'm not going anywhere.
No, it's definitely, but it's actually growing even faster overseas. I mean, it's represented in 126 countries now, so it really is a burgeoning movement, yeah.
Wow.
That's good news. That is fantastic news.
I didn't know that. Okay, well, that's great. Julian, you want to wrap up?
Well, yeah, thanks for being with us again, Stephen. And like we said, we could keep on going for days about this, and hopefully you can join us at another point and we can maybe, like Faiz said, discuss some solutions, and just hash out some of what we think are alternatives, because we need to provide alternatives to what we see as problems. Otherwise, we're just pointing fingers. But
maybe Stephen can a big part of the show could be Stephen just talking about this People's Bank, what exactly it is, how it will work, etc. I don't know if that's a good idea or not.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. We can ask our listeners, they can give us their feedback. Unfortunately, I mean, we've still got some people that have joined us back again after all these connection problems, and we are intermittently actually connecting at the moment, but people are still there in the wings. They can tell us what they think of these ideas and what they want to discuss next. Many people are interested in this topic. We had a lot of interest in this particular show for this week, so Yeah, we need some feedback on in which direction we think we should go. So I think we should just play it open-ended until then. But thanks for joining us this evening. And thank you once again, Stephen, for being our guest and for sharing some knowledge with us. And we'll do this again sometime. And sure. All the listeners and to everybody, it will be available as a podcast, as a SoundCloud, and on YouTube. We'll post it as a video so you can access it there. And just spread the links, spread the word, keep participating. Thanks for all your participation on the chat room this evening, and good night. And
before you go, can I say something? Julian, if anyone wants any more information, my books are available locally. They can contact me.
That is interesting. How can they also contact you and get a hold of your material? That is very important. Sorry that we missed that.
It's especially valuable for, you know, if you're a student or studying, because it provides a lot of answers. A lot of mysteries are solved in the two books. The one is a history of central banking and the enslavement of mankind, and the other one is Inside the South African Reserve Bank: Origins and Secrets Exposed. So if you want to contact me, they're very reasonably priced. They're half the price that they're being advertised on Amazon. So just contact me at abolishusury, ABOLISH.
Do you know what we can do, Stephen? We can actually post these links on our page. We can make it available on our page, and we can have everybody being able to get in contact with you. And have you got anything just like very easy for people to follow you on or get hold of you on, like a Twitter account or something?
No, I'm not. I actually prefer to not be too directly involved, because it distracts me from more important things. So yeah. I'm not really linked onto any
social media.
There's a Facebook page you can have a look at.
And that is?
It's under Stephen Mitford Goodson.
Okay.
And I think there are about 300 likes, so you can add to that tonight.
Lovely.
If you want.
But we'll post your email address. Shall we post your email address on our Facebook page?
Yes, if you could do that, and and the titles of the books.
Okay, we'll do that. So,
I'm sure there may be some people who actually benefit from what's contained in there, and they can share them with other people and similarly.
Yeah, unfortunately, we've lost a lot of people because of all these disconnections we've had. So a lot of people will catch on to this information from the podcast and from the recordings that we make. But thanks again. Thanks again for being a part of our show. And this is where we're going to basically just round up and say goodnight to everybody and have a good evening. And keep warm. It's very cold these days.
Thanks for being on the show, Stephen. It was really great to have you, brother. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks a lot. Take care, man.
Pleasure. Bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye. You're listening to ZA Talk Radio.